You are tuned in to a fireside chat with Zany Mystic. Join us now on another exciting metaphysical journey. Relax, tune in, drop out, and take a seat by the fire as we explore new realms and possibilities. This is Magenta Pixie. You can find me at magentapixie.weebly.com. But now, here is Zany Mystic and guest. Enjoy the show.
Greetings, and welcome to a fireside chat with Zany Mystic. I'm your host, Lance White. Tonight, my guest is Timothy Glenn. Timothy is an author, astrologer, numerologist, and spiritual reader. He came into this life without the veils pulled all the way down. Like many of us, he never fit into the real world, or the unreal world. Early years include music, voice, and exposure to astrology. Theatrical training and performance prepared him for a brief stint as a minister. He has done past life regression, sound healing, astrology, and now does multidimensional soul purpose readings. You can find out more on his website at www.soulpurposereadings.com. So let's welcome Timothy back to the show now. Hi, Timothy. How are you?
Oh, I'm just somehow getting through all the insanity. How about you?
Well, the same applies here. It does seem as if things have turned a corner at long last, and it's a good thing that, you know, I'm meeting the challenge head on in the moment.
There you go. Go through the center.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, the eye of the storm, isn't it?
Yeah. Yes, and actually, you just turned a corner because I was always thinking I would ask you to do this, a tweak little thing in the little intro that you gave me there. Yeah, the real world?
Right.
See, this time, this time you caught it.
Yeah, I read that and I thought, wait a minute, this is upside down and backwards land. You know, our eyes see everything. They're like mechanical tools. Very clever ones at that, and they turn everything upside down and backwards. So to make sense of things, really, we need to add a third eye, because we have one, two, and three. The pineal gland is the third eye, and that forms a triangle or triad or law of three or whatever you want to call it, a pyramid shape that sits somewhere around the reptilian brain, right, and the pineal gland.
Oh, the reptilian brain. Yeah, back to our friends, the reptilians, huh?
Oh, yeah, they're our dear friends, our dear, dear friends.
They're our cousins.
Cousins, yes. Well, yeah, I guess they think that we're trailer trash. And then, according to some humans, they're cosmic scum. So, you know, who are you going to listen to? I don't know.
Well, in other words, we mirror each other perfectly.
Oh, yes. Oh, yeah. Thank you. Thank you. Right. You know, the Essenes had that seven mirror thing going on. And, you know, I like to see things. I like to see things as a mirror for me. And I don't always like the reflection. So the uncomfortable part for me is learning how to smile first so that the mirror will smile back at me, as Bashar says.
Yeah, that's a minor detail.
Yeah, right. Yeah, and then the work continues from that point.
Yeah. Yeah, there's a friend here in Reno who just came up with a new one recently, a new little adage, and that's laugh first. Whatever happens. Whatever happens, the first thing you need to do is laugh.
Yeah, I like that one. I like that one. You know, there are a lot of secret groups out there in the world, and especially now they're forming like Howard Johnson flapjacks, and people are, you know, hunkering down and getting ready for some major thing to occur. And there's a seriousness in the tone, and it reminds me of the esoteric school that I was involved with in the 70s when everybody was imitating the teacher who had a walk of humility, shall we say. And so I was in the school for, you know, about 5 years or so, and everybody seemed to adopt his posture from imitation in the instinctive moving brain. And so there was a whole school of people that was, you know, slightly hunched over with their hands clasped behind their back. So, you know, that gets old after a while. You know, we love gurus, and, you know, we love to adore them and then let our power go. So, well, let me shut up and just let you talk for a while.
Well, you know, we used to do that stuff. We used to love it, right?
Yes, right. Oh, I don't love it now, and I don't think it's necessary at all. In fact, it hasn't been necessary for a long time.
Well, it never was necessary.
Right.
But it was here. And, you know, like the old saying, well, it takes all kinds to make a world. Well, not necessarily, but we were stuck with them anyway.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
So, well, so things don't necessarily need to be needed, but, well, it's what was here. But now it's definitely the time for everybody to be their own guru.
Mm-hmm.
After all, thou art God. And as Proterian says, thou art God. Now act like it. So the time is upon us, and yeah, it's fun astrological weather now too. We have finally, since last time we talked, gone through the seventh and final exact square of Uranus and Pluto. And remember, this one is the big game changer. And it took over 2.5 years for them to do their dance in the sky, squaring each other on 7 different occasions, exactly. But they were square the whole time, and they still are. In fact, they're less than 1.5 degrees apart right now. And the thing is, we're over the hump, but not out of the woods. There's still time for this to unfold and play out, because they're still close together, and so we are still feeling that. Although there will not be another exact square, they will still be less than 1.5 degrees apart in January of 2016. So to quote the great Yogi Berra, it ain't over till it's over. We've still got time to play with that one. And another one is people just breathed this huge sigh of relief in December. I think it was the 23rd when Saturn finally left Scorpio and went into Sagittarius. And they're like, oh, thank God, oh, wonderful. But what they were not noting was that Saturn would retrograde back in. Saturn is in retrograde motion right now. And on June 15th, it's going to go back into Scorpio again. So we get some review lessons, maybe. Or maybe he'll just go in and say, okay, 11th hour confessions, anybody? Last call. And so, so he'll go direct in the beginning of August and then in the middle of September, let's see, September 18th. Finally, he will leave Scorpio and won't be back there for another quarter of a century or so. So, it's like, whew, okay. Then that one will be over. So we're still in this place where we're feeling all of these intense energies, but we know we have, as you put it, we've rounded the corner. And you can feel it, can't you, that the tide has turned?
Oh, yes. This is a time to expect the unexpected and to be present in the moment, because everything is going to start talking at once.
Yeah, it's going to be a really wild ride. And I loved your show last week with Jay Widener.
Oh, thank you.
Yeah, and it was a lot of fun to listen to anyway, even though you had your technical problems at the beginning.
Right.
Welcome to the Matrix. But that was a lot of fun, because, you know, you both were into, like, let's call everything into question now.
Uh-huh.
Like, what is real? And especially when you're talking about the mainstream propaganda machine out there, is any of it real?
Yeah. Yeah, well, and, you know, I was really surprised to hear Jay. I hadn't talked to Jay for a long time. It's been more than a few years since I used to have him on the show quite frequently, and, you know, it wasn't any intentional thing to not have him on the show, but our paths kind of diverged, and I've never heard him so so clear and so lucid and just really in a state of awe, shock, and wonder. And I felt like he was mirroring exactly where I am, And, you know, he's done a lot more research than I have into esoteric realms. I've dabbled in it, but I'm no expert by any means. And, you know, it was just kind of a little surprise for me and a validation to hear him be basically on the same page with all this stuff that is coming up for everybody to be in awe about. I mean, it's so overwhelming in some ways. It's not really, because we all knew what was going to be here.
Yeah.
You know, so we like to fool ourselves or surprise ourselves that, oh, my, I'm shocked. But really, we knew and we know because our guides or, you know, our team is always there if we want to connect to them. And, you know, like that. So, yeah, thank you.
Well, you could say that we're always connected to them. We're just not always paying attention to them.
Oh, yeah, no kidding. Sometimes I feel like I have rocks in my head.
Well, that's all okay. It's all part of the process. Because this is the time, actually, these are the times we've been talking about.
Yeah. Yeah.
How many decades have we been talking about this stuff? Well, this is it, kids.
Wow.
It is upon us now.
Yeah.
Yeah, and so we're all looking around going, whoa.
Well, you know, the Proterian Collective had a great deal to do with this shift, as did probably the Sirians and the Arcturians and the Pleiadians and lots of other wonderful family members and friends that have been keeping an eye on us and that are, you know, our relations. And the Proterians, I find that quite fascinating that this is what they do for fun. You know, that you guys go in and you explain it. You're the guest.
Okay. Yeah, the Proterian perspective is it's a fun game to go into galaxies and galactic clusters or whatever that seem to be steeped in the dark, so to speak. And in other words, they're pretty locked into the matrix. And so then to help those beings in that matrix awaken to who and what they really are, which simply stated is God. And so to them, that's amusing, especially when they hit a planet like this one. This is intergalactic Comedy Central to them.
Yeah.
I mean, they look at us and they see us as these magnificent creators, and this is what we're creating? This can't be serious. Okay,
yeah.
Thou art God, and this is what you're doing? It has to be a joke.
So
they don't take any of this seriously. But, you know, they had said, and I think we discussed this last fall, because it really started last spring where, you know, we were really getting discombobulated because what was happening was we were starting to really physically, literally disengage from the matrix. And so they had reminded us that, oh, God, who knows, 5, 6, 10 years ago or whatever, they were talking about when we would reach this point that we would need to let go of all external points of reference.
Mm.
There would only be one point of reference, and that's in the heart.
Mm-hmm.
Just the core of your being. And so from that space, we can start co-creating new external points of reference from the place of divine love. The old external points of reference were all tied into the matrix, which was fear-based. And so if you're getting woozy, wonky, and dizzy and whatever else, good. That just means you're disconnecting from the old so-called reality, the old matrix, which was fear-based, and you're letting go of those points of reference because you're not looking at that anymore as the real world, as we discussed earlier when you did your little introduction.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, like so many of us, you know, it's like what we saw, what we remembered, what we could feel, etc., didn't fit in with the external world that we were being told was real. And we could look right at it and see it wasn't real.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I still have this extremely vivid memory of when I was 5 years old and I was talking to another kid in the neighborhood who was just a few years older than I was, and I was trying to get some of this through to him. And there was a typical smart-ass thing people used to say back then. and he walked away saying that. He said, "Oh, yeah, you're all right. The rest of the world is wrong." And I walked away thinking, the rest of the world is wrong.
You're right. Yeah, yeah, right.
Yeah,
but
so
it is so funny that, I mean, it is funny that we're so easily convinced otherwise, that it's everyone else that's right and we're wrong, and that's just a running program in the Matrix. And my friend Stella Work, who I was very close to for many years, she said, you know, I used to consider, you know, be in my head about what other people were thinking about me, until I realized one day they're in their heads worried about what I'm thinking about them. And so she just stopped doing it because she knew that, that there was no reason for it. And I thought that was quite a brilliant statement.
Yeah, and when it comes to deciding what is real and what isn't, well, go back to the David Icke statement that infinite love is the only truth, everything else is illusion. Because everything, no matter what it is simply a mode of perception. And, you know, whether it's a cosmic plane, a dimension, any set of dimensions, any world, any realm of any kind, it's simply a mode of perception. And as the creator, we can perceive things any way we want. And ultimately, everything exists. If you can think of it, it obviously exists. Mm. Because it's contained within the infinite wholeness. And so to think that this one little timeline we're on in the midst of this one stilted little so-called reality is the ultimate reality is pretty freaking stupid.
Mm-hmm.
Because even in this one silly world we've been imagining here, we have infinite timelines, we have shifted timelines, and then we have the parallel realities. And this is a little outline from the Proterians, is that there are infinite parallel realities. They're not timelines that are, you know, just other timelines within this one, but they're parallel Earths that are close enough to this one that we could call them parallel. Then you get far enough out and they're different enough that they're not really parallel. They're going off at strange angles, and it's mm-hmm. like, okay, that's not parallel. So those are what we would call alternate realities. Mm. And then, okay, now each of the alternate realities then will have infinite parallel realities, and each one of those parallel realities will have infinite timelines. And then we go out beyond the alternate realities, and we have related realities. Huh. Whereas, yeah, it's kind of Earth-like, and almost, sort of, but not really.
Huh.
And it goes on and on and on. Everything you could possibly think of exists. And so since every timeline, every kind of reality you can imagine, whether it's parallel, alternate, or related to this one, it all exists. So now the question is, what reality do we want to tune into? Because that's all it matters. You as a divine being can tune into whichever one of those realities you choose. And there are just so many millions of us now, eyes wide open, going into this shift because, man, we're done with this one.
Oh, no kidding.
Yeah, a year or so ago, I wrote a couple articles and posted them on Laura Bruno's blog, and one was called Your Gaming Review. And it was like, okay, in this one, we're pretending that we're writing reviews, game reviews, for a cosmic gaming magazine. And there's this game called 3D Planet Earth, and so we've played it. And so now what we're going to do is quit playing and sit down and write our review.
Oh. Well, a lot of people would like to know just where are we going to sit, since there are a lot of people who think they sit on thrones, and how are we going to get there when we're already there where our feet are planted?
Yeah, well, wherever you go, there you are.
There you are, yeah. Oh, yes, what an interesting story.
Yeah, but the thing is there anything to worry about? Because worry is just another facet of fear.
Mm-hmm.
So as we center ourselves in the divine love, which is the essence of the infinitude itself, then we are simply going to drift into the reality that resonates most with us. And this old fear-based stuff obviously no longer resonates with the vast majority of beings here.
Well, you know, there will be people who are, they're there or here with us now, and they're going to ask the question, well, how do I actually move my point of reference or the assemblage point, as Castaneda used to like to call it, how do I move my point of reference from the mind, which has many rooms that you can get lost in, the maze of the mind or the earthly maze? How do you move out of the mind and into, you know, let's just say a balanced mind that is then connected to the mind of the heart, which is the core center where the I am or God or, you know, whatever you want to call it, the zero-point field or all it is or the isness or, you know, on and on and on. How do people, what would you say is a way to shift perspective quickly, like now?
Like right this instant. Okay, before the show's over, people are going to have it shifted.
All right. All right, let's do it.
Cool, all right, yeah. Okay, now what we can do is, the way Proterian puts it, is we can do what the Buddha did. In your mind, you can finally achieve the divine screw it.
Okay.
I mean, here the mind is trying so hard to figure out something that cannot even be figured out and wouldn't matter even if it got figured out. And once the mind figures that out, it can say, well, screw it. And once the mind figures out that it doesn't matter, and it would never be figured out anyway, then it can realize it can now be off duty. See, the mind was given this task for which it was not designed. It was never designed to lead. It was never designed to have it all figured out, especially not in advance, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. And the mind has been tortured through all these millennia, believing that it has to do all of this nonsense that it's not even designed to do. So now you figure out that it doesn't need to be figured out.
I like that.
Yeah. And so you achieve the divine screw it. I mean, have you ever found yourself at any time during this life working on something and it's just not working, finally you just throw in the towel and say, oh, screw it?
Yeah, about 20, 30 times a day.
Okay, good. Okay, perfect. Then you've had lots of practice, right?
Oh, yeah.
Okay. Right. So that's all you need to do in your mind is just throw in that towel and say, oh, screw it. And then you could do something else, and it's real simple. A real physical thing. Breathe. Yeah, just breathe. Hmm. And when stuff comes up, that's one of the first things we need to remember to do. Is to breathe. Because in the Matrix, we've been trained that when something comes up and it invokes any fear, what's the first thing we do? We stop breathing.
Mm.
We tense ourselves up. We tighten up. So anytime anything comes up, stop and breathe.
Mm.
Yeah. Chill out. And this is where we can invoke what Proterian calls the principles of divine apathy. Or creative apathy.
Uh-huh.
Yes. Creative apathy. Recognize apathy as an actual energetic in your field. Now, we've all experienced apathy. But you notice in the Matrix how your apathy tends to gravitate where you don't want it. And then you end up with all this energy being invested in things that you don't want.
Yes.
Okay, well, get creative. Make friends with your apathy. It's an energetic in your field. And then you can start assigning it where you would rather have it. So when this Matrix nonsense pops up, just assign your creative apathy there.
I like that.
Yes.
Now,
and
it, what,
yeah, breathe.
Okay.
And breathe into the heart. And also, if you go to Laura Bruno's blog, in search this blog, just type in the heart breath. That's a technique that the Proterians had shared. Just breathe, and that particular technique, breathing technique, is really good. So really effective stuff. So and it's really simple. And just remember Proterians' all-purpose three-step formula. One, come from a loving heart. Two, put one foot in front of the other. And three, walk in faith. Thou art God. You are part of the infinite energy field. You are a direct expression of the infinite. And as such, what is it you can't do? Hello? So have the faith that you can create whatever reality you truly want. Go into whatever world is actually already there, because everything is right here, right now. Everything. So all we're doing is choosing a different reality. And there are so many millions, even tens of millions of us on this planet right now who've been playing this game, who are now co-creatively choosing a new Earth. And that's one that...
Yeah. Does that have anything to do with the huge movement to, quote, shift dimensions into a fifth dimension, an imaginary fifth dimension, when we're actually infinite dimensions and we're outside all those already?
Yeah, see, that's one that the Proterians find very amusing, that we have all of these teachings here that we are third dimensional. That's it. You're only in one dimension. It's the third dimension. And we're trying to fight our way through the muck and mire of the fourth so we can jump into the fifth and say, safe! And they're looking at us, and our basic human gridwork is something they see as 12-dimensional. And so they say, well, as a starter, why don't you just integrate the 12 dimensions that you already are? Mm-hmm. And from there, you can explore the infinite dimensions. Mm-hmm. Because there are many people who have experienced a 13th dimension, a 14th dimension, etc. And it's all right here, right now. So let's just integrate the 12 that we already are, and then, you know, start playing. Jump into the 13th, 14th, start going out into infinity and just creating and doing whatever.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. I've heard recently that... we can go beyond creation, that the dimensions up to whatever you want to imagine is all still part of creation, and that there is a vast, there are vast realities outside of creation. And that makes sense if you look at it from quantum physics, because Nassim Haramein did a film called The Black Hole, or Black Hole Theory, I think, or Black Hole... Anyway, we're in a black hole universe, and... the bottom line to everything, just to sum it up, is that all of the matter that comprises our universes and all the galaxies and all the Big Bangs and everything, if you could put it into a cube, it would be, it would be a percentage of what is there already. So this matter that we see is really nothing. It's the space between atoms and molecules and quarks that is the everything, or the all it is. So, I like to play that game of imagining that I'm not my body, and then I imagine that I am the space between the atoms that are bebopping in and out of everything so fast that they produce this dense illusion of matter. And sometimes that's kind of fun.
Yes, well, they're all temporarily manifested illusions anyway. Electrons and whatever else.
Yeah.
See, you are the essence. You are the reality. Starting back in the 70s, I used to have fun asking people a very simple little question. Are you a soul that has a body, or a body that has a soul? And 99% of them would say, oh, I'm a body that has a soul. And then I'd ask, okay, what happens when you die? And they'd say, oh, I go to heaven. I say, well, what do they do with the body? I say, well, they cremate it, or they bury it. I say, okay, so where do you go? Oh, I go to heaven. Now, which one goes to heaven, the body or the soul? The soul. Okay, well, which one are you? Oh, yes, you are the essence. And the body is another manifested illusion, and it is not this frozen sculpture that we've been taught that it is. It's a free-flowing energy field. and you are free to do whatever creative fun things you would like to do with it. You can shapeshift, you can walk in and out of dimensional portals or whatever else. You can create your own portals, whatever. So there really is no limitation except that which we impose on ourselves.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, you know, I recently went outside to look up at the stars at night, and I was I focused, something drew my attention in the sky, and it was, you know, it was a light of some sort. I don't know what it was, but it was at the elevation of a plane, and it looked like it was like a spinning or slowly turning light that had red and blue, maybe gold and things like that, and it was going just slightly up, and then it was going slightly down, and it was going slightly up. And I couldn't take my eyes off of it, and I was feeling this energetic pulse. And as I looked up, I kind of used my fingers to, as a telescope, a cheap man's telescope. And I could see the filaments of light coming out of my fingers and in the air that connected me to whatever that thing was and connecting to all that is. And there were just these, I mean, I can't even say, it was just everything was light, and it moves, and it's liquid, and we're in it, and we can play with it, and to throw, you know, create a little ball, a light ball, and play ball outside. And, you know, what would that do to the sporting world if we started broadcasting throwing light balls in the air? I mean, wouldn't that kind of screw up the making so much money off of football games and beer and everything else?
Of course, it becomes a different game then, because if everybody can do telekinesis, Proterian's observation on the sports part of it is, you know, with most of these games, especially the major things, you know, the football, the basketball, the soccer, et cetera, baseball, whatever, their observation, first of all, was simply, there's one ball and everybody wants it.
Mm.
And then they can act out their control dramas according to a set of rules. Of course, you have to have rules. It's Earth, right? That's, okay, so we have to have rules. And then within that framework of the rules, we can act out all our control dramas around a ball.
Mm.
So, yeah. But then we step it up to, you know, okay, let's play with telekinesis. Okay, there's a long drive deep in left field, and oh, it's veering over into right field now. Oh, wait, it's coming back to the infield now. Because everybody's pushing and pulling on it with their mental powers and so forth. Yeah, I think we'll outgrow the silly sports thing here.
Oh, I hope so. I mean, all of this is so tired and old. It's just, you know, the Roman games and this and that. Well, they were actually more interesting because they had, beautiful men buried up to their neck, and they'd have these rotating blades that would just behead them. And, you know, that was kind of fun for a minute. And chariots that were dashing around with lions and things like that, and blood sports. And I think that's a little bit, that's really not my cup of tea. And
no.
Today, the sports has gotten so, it seems that the folks, the little people who are behind things, you know, pulling levers and strings, they really like that violence thing, and they're really pumping it up in all the movies and the science fiction, but they're also having to reveal, I mean, they, meaning all of us, are having to reveal to ourselves the truth about what's going on here, and it's kind of like a funhouse ride, you know, you go in and, surprise! So I think there are going to be a lot of surprises from now on. Like, from this moment on, you know, I've seen a lot of surprises, and I've been shocked quite a few times the last few days.
Yeah, and look for big ones. Look for big ones coming down the pike now.
Now, okay, would you elaborate on that?
Okay, how about the big game? Remember Wernher von Braun had said that there would be, you know, the war on this, the war on that, you know, then the war on terror, and the last one would be the fake alien invasion.
Oh, yeah.
And yeah. What does the Vatican have up its sleeve right now? What kind of games are they playing?
Is oh, yeah.
On? Yeah, so, you know, they're all, you know, all these different factions are ready to play their trump cards. and it's going to be a real trip.
Yes, yes. You know, we talked about that in the Galactic History video series, and how during this period of time, which is illusory, but it's, you know, like a moment anyway, that there would be all the players and the factions that would have to lay their cards down. And, you know, there is a point when there's a bet, like in the 007 movie, the James Bond movie, where he's playing the La Chiffre or something, you know, and they're betting, and it's you know, there's $10 million on the table and something like that. And there is one moment, the moment of truth, when all the tricks have been pulled. You know, they didn't kill James. You know, he came back to life, and he lived to save the world again. And it happens really fast at the end of the movie. So it seems like this movie script is another version of James Bond movies, that we've been kind of chug-lugging along in the same old villainous story in one after another, and they're fascinating. I love them. I really do. I love all the villains, and I love all the heroes. And James just, you know, he loves what he does, and he doesn't care about the money. So at the last minute, we're going to be looking at the cards that people have been holding on to for all these thousands and hundreds of thousands of years, whatever that means, probably nothing. And, right. You know, we're going to be seeing the illusion drop. I mean, we're actually going to get to look behind the curtain of the wizard, and then we're going to get to look at the levers and controls and who's behind there and all the different faces, and it's going to be one revelation after another.
Yeah, that's where we start to roll the credits.
Right.
Really, I mean, that's all it amounts to.
Yeah, right. Yeah.
This has been a fascinating movie, and we've had really good seats, and we're coming up to the end now, and then they're going to start rolling the credits. And actually, it's kind of like when you buy the DVD of a film, and, yeah, you've got two DVDs in there. You watch the film, and then the other one is like the making of.
Oh, yeah, right.
And
there are people who will linger on that like to see that stuff, and they even like to see the credits rolling up. So some of us will just get up out of our chairs and seem to disappear, probably, maybe. And, you know, other people will sit in the theater a little longer, a minute or two, and watch the credits, and then other people will go home and, you know, play another CD so they can really absorb what happened and really understand, like, the Oracle talks to Neo on the bench, and he goes to her in the last movie, and I think it's the last movie, one of the movies, and says, you know, you didn't come here to find out, you know, about what you did. You already know that. You came here to find out why you're doing it. And so we're getting awfully close to the final, quote, battle, unquote, aren't we?
I don't know that it's a battle, but...
I mean, that was a joke.
Yeah, okay.
Yeah, but please, you know, clarify that, because a lot of us hold it as a battle.
Yes. So, yeah, battle has been a big part of the Matrix programming here, and it's all just part of that divide-and-conquer game. And so now we're going to get to the point where it's time to unify and realize that the old game really is done, and it's okay. You know, and no judgment, no condemnation of it or any part of it, because remember, when we were talking last time, I pointed out that the Matrix design is really pretty clever, because if you judge any part of it, you're stuck with it, and it gives you 8 zillion things to judge.
Mm-hmm.
That's a good design.
Mm-hmm.
And like the adage, if you fight it, you feed it. If you're fighting any part of the Matrix, you're stuck with it.
Mm-hmm.
And if you're angry at any part of the Matrix, you're stuck with it. And, of course, the whole thing is designed to totally piss you off.
Right. Very clever. It works, you know, for a minute.
Yeah, for however many TikToks this has really been, yes, who cares?
Yeah.
It doesn't matter. Yeah. So as all this unfolds, going back to your talk with Jay Widener last week, as all this stuff starts coming out, especially as the propaganda machines crank up and so forth and they start whatever stunts they're going to do, we can just, how many millions of us are going to be sitting here going, okay, what's the trick? Where, you know, it's all illusion. How much of this is real? How much of this is true? This is probably all just theater, because that's largely what it is. Because all of these governments and religions and intelligence agencies and whatever else, they're all putting on theater here.
Uh-huh.
And you look at some of these events, it's like, you know, well, like you and Jay were talking about Sandy Hook, you know. So many of us realized right off the bat, you know, that never even happened.
Yeah.
It was all staged.
Yeah.
It's like, so more people are at the point now where when the system starts pulling these stunts, people are just going to, wait a minute, time out, pan the camera back. Let's look at it differently here. All right. I can see through the illusion here.
Hmm. Well, one example that came up for me recently was I lived through the 60s, and I kind of got, you know, awakened by the Beatles, and it was playing through a little tiny plastic radio in my grandmother's cottage, and I was a teen, you know, in Santa Barbara, and the songs just, they moved me, they stirred me in a new direction. And so after the Beatles came out, there were rumors of Paul, you know, Paul's really dead, and people were playing records backward, and Paul is dead, you know. And I remember that vaguely, but it didn't really sink in until about a month or two ago when a friend shared a link to a story and a video or an audio, MP3, and, you know, somebody had put together, of the concept that Paul really is gone, and that Ringo had told, you know, before he crossed over, went to another side of things, that he wanted to set the record straight, and that Paul did die in the 60s, 1968 or something, and that they got together with the record companies and the people that were the players at that time, which was, you know, whoever that was. And they all agreed that we're going to just have to, if we want the Beatles to continue, we're going to just have to, you know, buck up and use the double that they used for all the concerts where people were storming them, and girls that were, probably girls and guys, were just insane. They would have killed them and torn them apart and probably eaten them just so they could be part of them. My dog does that to my arm, and she loves me so much she wants to be, you know, she wants to eat me. And so, it made sense when I thought about it that all of this is true. And, you know, I don't know if they're clones standing in for presidents or things like that, but if it's conceivable, yeah, probably in some reality, yeah, they use multiple clones and cloning centers to do these things, and in some reality, that's going on. I don't know if that's this one, but we'll have to wait and see, won't we?
Well, we'll probably see it. But you know, if you really get into looking at things, you'll notice that a lot of these people that are claimed to be one person or another are definitely not that person. You look at the shape of the ears or the shape of the nose, sometimes, you know, the cheekbones, or, you know, like this whoever this poor stiff was that they executed claiming he was Saddam Hussein.
Yeah.
The guy they had in the courtroom was obviously not Saddam Hussein.
Yeah.
You know, in Iraq, before America invaded and destroyed the country, they had, you know, free medical care, including free dental care. And so, you know, Saddam Hussein had a perfect set of straight, pearly whites. And the guy in the courtroom had crooked teeth. Now, how does his teeth suddenly become crooked? I mean, you don't even need that face recognition software that the FBI and other people use. You don't even need that. You can look at all these little things and then look at something obvious like that. Or that guy that they showed claiming that he was Osama bin Laden watching himself on a TV, you know, before they did the alleged raid, et cetera. Well, you know, if you go back to the 80s and look, you know, everything's on the Internet. Go back and look at it and study the shape of Osama bin Laden's ears and his head and so forth. And the most telling one was it had had a completely different slope to the forehead. Mm. Now, you might think, okay, yeah, maybe his ears change shape a little bit, but how does he get a completely different slope to his forehead? But, you know, yeah.
Yeah, right.
Yeah, he looks
right,
kind of like...
exactly.
Yeah, he looks kind of like, you know, Osama bin Laden, yeah. But, and the people just sit there and just gobble it up, and oh, my God, people, come on, wake up. So how much of this is real? How many, you know, you don't know. Is it a stand-in, a double, you know, is it actually a clone? Who knows?
Right.
Yeah. In
right.
fact, on David Icke's website, during that farcical trial with the alleged Saddam Hussein, he had a picture of the guy in the courtroom that was supposedly him, and they put like a word balloon or, you know, caption in there, and he was saying something to the effect of, "Oh, I'm you know, number 417 from batch 55." Yeah, just
oh
one
my
of the clones. Just one of the clones.
Yeah, no kidding. And it makes me wonder, you know, if anybody really, of course, from a spiritual aspect, no one ever is born or dies because it's a continuum. It's you know, it's not real. There's nothing that enters and leaves, other than some of the bodies, the different finer bodies have different landing ports, and some of them don't land at all. They never go anywhere. They're just still. They're stillness or isness or the core. But it makes me wonder about other anomalies that we're seeing. And by comparing notes with each other, like we do on these shows, and you and I may be doing some shows together, I think, because you know, I have fun talking about this stuff. You know, it's really harmless. And science fiction has told us all these years. Look at cone heads. Now there's an article saying that there really are cone heads, that they were in Egypt. They had tall, you know, they had you know, something to cover up the head, a headdress, and that the Vatican, the Pope, and all those crazy wacky people that wear those funny hats like the Flying Nun did, are cone heads, or descendants of cone heads. And look at 007 movie Goldfinger. Well, you know, there are rumors that there are DNA operations where they're shipping people, whole people, wrapped in gold because it preserves the DNA, and then they're, you know, shipped off world, and so on and so on and so forth. Takes you down to Star Wars, and, you know, it all seems pretty funny. You have to have a sense of humor. You have to laugh at it at a certain point, don't you think?
Well, laughter is really a super key. You know, Merlin had said that laughter is the highest form of truth in this world, if not the only form of truth.
Wow. Well, I did not know. I'm channeling Johnny Carson now. I did not know.
Yeah. Yeah. If you think, you know, when you're laughing, first of all, the mind, you were asking about, you know, people, how do people free themselves from the mind? Well, when you get lost in a really good belly laugh, well, when you're doing that, you are freeing yourself from the constraints of mechanical thinking.
Oh, yes, that.
Yes, and on top of it releases endorphins into your system, and go on down the list.
Well, you know, I wouldn't be alive today if I didn't have a sense of humor. You know, it just, I have a, quote, terminal illness, and I've had it for 32 years. So at some point, you have to laugh, because if you take it too seriously, your stress will kill you.
Yes.
You know, so I'm actually having fun laughing now, because everything I do seems to bring a chuckle, you know.
Yeah, back in the 80s, I was involved with a spiritual group, and they were one of these groups that talked about the importance of laughter and having fun and so on and so forth. But they would talk about it in these serious, somber tones.
Uh-huh.
It is so important for you to have a sense of humor. It is important to laugh more. Blah, 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 blah. And I was sitting around a table with a group of these people, and they're talking about humor. And you know, like, this is important spiritual information. You must have humor. You must laugh. And I said, yeah, I'm deathly serious about my sense of humor.
Wow. It sounds like we were the same school.
And they looked at me like, you know, deer in the headlights.
Right.
Like, or maybe, you know, some thought, are you blaspheming? Are you making fun of the words of the master teachers?
Well, what do you think of master teachers and all that stuff?
I think we're cool.
Oh, yeah, thank you. Well, you too.
But that's all of us.
Yes, I know.
The old game where we had the humans posing as gurus and so forth, yeah, that was part of the old game. Now, instead of that, we simply all emerge as the divine beings we are, and we can play and co-create anything. And actually, on one level, we don't create anything because it already exists. We just choose which one of the infinite realities we're going to tune into.
Well, now, what about the idea that is rolling around out there in the ethers that we need some kind of, that we can connect to some kind of real masters, that are real guides that will assist us in making the transition to the real worlds that are outside of the Matrix. I know it sounds a little bit like the salvation or savior theme, but do you think that there will actually be a moment when there will be some kind of actual empowerment that comes from various sources that comes in, or is that just my imagination?
I would change one preposition there. Okay. I wouldn't say it comes from them.
Right.
It comes from us. And okay. They, and we've got these other beings all around, like the Protarians, for example. They're not caught in the Matrix, and they're having a good time interacting with it and playing with it.
Uh-huh.
And they're having a good time communicating with us who think we're actually in it. And it'll just come to the point that we'll wake up and they'll be there joking around with us. And it's like, how many times have you been somewhere and somebody, you know, dozes off, and when they wake up, you just start talking again?
Oh, yeah, yeah. Well, I've done that, when I was out of it, and I literally fell asleep and had my head hit my dinner plate. It was really funny.
Oh,
I mean, when I go to sleep, I really cut some Z's.
Yeah.
Well, so now the Protarians are all with us, and the the X's and the Y's and the Z's, because everybody's got their own set of, you know, galactic family and so on and so forth that they're identified with. But if they're with us now, why can't we see them in our room? Are we just not quite, have we not let go of enough belief systems?
That's a major part of it. And it's important to remember that, grasping all of these concepts mentally is an important first step. But getting into the emotional body is the next step, to be able to feel the reality of what we're talking about. And then we can start getting it into the physical body. And I just love the story that Anelia Benz told a few years ago of talking to her guides, because she can talk with them all the time, or her friends, not necessarily guides, they're our buddies,
right.
They're our friends.
Right.
And she was asking them to physically manifest, you know, right there in the house, you know, come on in. And they were saying, no, we don't want to shock your body, you know. And she was saying, oh, come on, this is me, you know. I'm Anelia Benz, I can do this. And so they did it, and then she found herself chasing her body as it ran through the house screaming.
I remember that story. Oh, my God. She is so funny. I just love Anelia. She is just a hoot.
Awesome. Yeah, she is beautiful. She's a great being. But that is one of my all-time favorite Anelia stories. That
yes.
Her body is running through the house. Come back, come back.
So, gosh.
Yeah, it's simply a matter of getting our emotional and physical bodies to accept what we already know is real.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, we're talking about, in terms of the TikTok reality, we're talking about a hell of a lot of TikToks of conditioning
mm-hmm.
in fear.
Mm-hmm.
mm-hmm. in lack mm-hmm. and limitation and struggle and belief and disbelief.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So, yeah. Breathe, huh? Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Let
breathe
go.
And laugh. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, yeah.
And as Buddha did, we can achieve the divine screw it.
I like that. That's really good. The divine screw it. I'll have to have some fun with that one.
Yeah. Just throw in the towel. Screw it.
Or
Oh, go ahead.
As Andrew Norton said in the movie Smoochie, somebody passed me a beach towel. My head is swimming. That was a great movie. So what were you going to say?
Oh, I don't remember now. It's too long ago.
We changed. We went into another dimension.
There we go. We shifted
timeline. We're in the 54th dimension now. Can you believe
there
that?
There we go. We like it. Yeah, or we slipped onto another timeline or something. Yeah,
That's right. You have to be careful because everything's a portal. You know, they don't call them windows for nothing.
That's right. Yeah, and we're at the place now where we can start interacting with all these different beings who've been here all along, and on one level we've always known it. But it's important to remember that a lot of these other beings are part of the game in the Matrix, too.
Yes.
And instead of quibbling about how many dimensions the Matrix is, or is it universal, or how big is it, and blah, 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 let's simply say that the Matrix, the capital M, because there are matrices within matrices within matrices, but the big Matrix with the capital M is multidimensional and intergalactic. How's that?
Mm.
And so our Pleiadian friends and so on and so forth, they're all part of the Matrix, too. They've all been living here in the Matrix with us. They might be more advanced within the constructs of this Matrix game, but so what?
It's a what so.
Yeah.
Yeah, so right. I never quite thought of it like that. That really expands my awareness to a much larger arena, you know. It boggles the mind.
Yeah, it sure does, because some people think that the Matrix is nothing but a misperception of 3D planet Earth. But as we've perceived, the Matrix creators were a little more on the clever side, and they made a really vast Matrix for us. And so, as we see it, it's a nine-dimensional grid work, which is plenty big to keep us entertained,
mm-hmm.
and it is intergalactic in scope.
Wow.
Some people say it's universal. My jury's out on that one. I don't know, and I like not knowing.
It's
delight in the mystery. I mean, we're living in this thing called infinity. Now, is your linear mind going to completely delineate the infinitude? I don't think so. Yeah, so, at any rate, as this game unfolds now, we'll just be looking at different facets of the Matrix.
Well, I really wish we could go on because, I have a story I wanted to tell about a cricket on a cutting board, but we won't have time. And I know I wanted to hear more about your thoughts about the Matrix because it really helps us to share our thoughts about this. However, we've only got about a minute and a half left, so I want to give you time to, share where your website is, and I want to put a plug in for you because I think you're the best. You give the best soul readings of anybody that I've ever had, and they're reasonable, and they're really powerful. So if anybody there wants a good soul reading, this is the person to contact.
So take it
away, my friend.
All right. Well, it's soul, that's S-O-U-L, soul purpose readings. com. And I haven't even done a little update on my little website in probably 8 or 9 months, but I'm getting to the point now I can start doing that. I've been lagging behind. I didn't get the New Year's article written until Chinese New Year's. And I still haven't done the article on the seventh and final exact square of Uranus and Pluto. So I'm lagging behind, but I'll be catching up here.
Wonderful. Well, again, Tim, thanks so much for returning, and I would just really love to have another conversation in May or something. So, come back soon, okay?
We will do that.
All right.
Sounds cool. Thank you.
Thank you.
All right.
Good night.
Bye-bye.